Welcome to episode 24 of All the Small Takes. And it's finally, as you're listening to this, the month of August. And that means it's the month where we get to see football again. Cooper and John, how psyched are you guys for football?
I'm so pumped. I think the most exciting thing happened to me today in like the past week of my life, which was watching Urban Meyer's post-practice press conference and just hearing him talk about Ohio State and all the things he's learned in 3 days of practice. 13 minutes of just riveting information that I already knew because I watched every single game from last year.
I think you need more going on in your life, man. John, what about you? Football.
Well,
football.
I just want to take a second to just push back at the idea that, you know, we've been without football for this whole period of time. We have had, you know, soccer, the original football. Some would say the real football, you know. Football. Don't want to trigger any of our listeners out there, you know. So
I've played soccer for 12 years, longer than that, 20 years about. Whew, forgot my age. I'm old. And I still thought that comment was a little ridiculous.
Cooper, are you on the inside, are you like a 15-year-old? Aren't we all?
Did you just hear about the most exciting part of my week? I was watching a press conference.
John, thoughts on Notre Dame football?
It's going to be great. We're going to win a lot. We're going to win. In fact, we're going to win so much, we're going to get tired of winning, and we're not going to lose.
Or you're going to get tired of winning so much that you'll lose 8 games.
No, I don't see that happening.
Very fake news.
Yeah,
sad.
Fake news.
All right. I noticed that none of you brought up the NFL, which is probably because you realize that the far superior team in the league is my New England Patriots. That's okay.
I don't know. Alshon Jeffrey's going to be like a huge difference maker and take the Eagles from 7-9 to
8-8,
15-1. So
I don't know if they don't. If the Patriots don't go 20-0, which isn't even possible, I think it's a disappointing season.
Probably is.
I digress. Yes, we cannot wait for football, but quickly, we want to let you guys know where you can find All the Small Takes online. You can find us on Twitter at Small Takes, Instagram, small_takes, Facebook, All the Small Takes, and Gmail, allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. Also, we've been teasing it now for a couple weeks, and we are proud and excited and happy to announce that you can also find us with our new website, smalltakes.com. Right, Cooper?
Yeah. So on our website, you can find eventually all of our pods, hopefully some new sports specific podcasts hosted by other people, and the ever growing media that is the written form, some blogs.
Yeah, there's a couple blogs up there right now. We'll hopefully have some more up as we go along. If you're interested in contributing, please reach out to us. Shout out to Cooper really quickly for designing the site. He spent a ton of time on it. It looks awesome. As he said, we're still figuring out how exactly all the podcast stuff works. There's these weird things called RSS feeds. So if you're a tech guy, if you're a techie, let us know.
Yeah, drop us a 5-star review and maybe leave some advice in there. You know,
so. that's an interesting way to give us some advice.
That's opening us up to a lot.
but really, you know, anyone who has advice, feel free to leave a 5-star review. You know,
there's going to be a review tomorrow that says change hosts. They all suck. Anyway, yeah, really excited about that. Check it out, smalltakes.com. And we'll jump right in now. We want to quickly touch on the Gold Cup, which was one of the cups we talked about in recent weeks, that the U.S., the U.S. won a cup. We won some silverware, as we discussed last week with our good friend Dan. We beat Jamaica in the final. Immediate reactions to the win.
I think this pretty much locks us in as a favorite for Russia 2018.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Definitely one of the best teams in the world.
Top six, at least.
We can only score on free kicks, and we look awful defending set pieces. But those don't really matter in the World Cup, so we should be good.
Nope.
I
enjoyed watching it.
I had one question that I was told to ask you, Cooper. Mm-hmm. Who scored the deciding goal for the United States?
A deflection. It was an own goal. Jordan Morris. Actually,
what did you say about a one Jordan Morris on last week's episode, I believe?
I said, no, 2 weeks ago. Actually, might have been 3. I said he lacked a little bit of fitness. looks like he was lacking fitness.
I think this has actually been going on over the period of the last 3 weeks. I think you've mentioned it every episode.
Have I?
I apologize for your comments about Mr. Morris's physique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't want to apologize still. I still think that even though Jordan Morris did score the winning goal, and some people have overreacted, specifically Taylor Tolman is saying during the commentary of the game, saying that this will go down in history in many USMNT fans' minds. I hope that's not true, because I think there are greater moments in US soccer history. And the simple fact is this: I don't think Jordan Morris is our answer at the number nine position, at being our center forward. Neither is Jozy Altidore, neither is Contempsius. What's missing from our team? Jozy Altidore looked good in the Gold Cup. Jordan Morris was serviceable. They don't offer enough to compete at a big stage like the World Cup. This is not going to get us past the big teams. It's not going to get us to the, you know, the semifinals or the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Pulisic's a great answer at number 10. We need a forward who can offer us more. And Jordan Morris, to me, isn't that type of player.
Yeah, I'm happy to have a guy who scores goals, and maybe we'll get someone better. But if not, he can put the ball in the net, and that's what matters. I do think people are overreacting a little bit, because the only reason his goal was the game winner was because he let in the one that tied the game.
Yes. Yeah.
Awful defending on the corner kick that led Jamaica score. So. Yeah, I mean, in fairness, Tim Howard did like tell him to get off of the back post, and had he been standing there, he probably would have just blocked it with his body. But yeah, Jordan Morris is great. He's an American. He's good at scoring goals. He can play. I'm not gonna be upset that he gets on the field. Cooper, you can cry about it, but I'll be fine.
If he replaces Dom Dwyer, which is currently probably the track that he's on, I'm probably gonna be a little upset about it.
Okay, we haven't seen Dom Dwyer play against any real competition.
No, we haven't.
That's a direct insult to Sporting KC.
He's no longer plays for Sporting KC anymore.
He got traded.
He did get traded.
For cash. For straight small cash. Things
first. Small things first is so real. All right. Where can we catch the U.S. men's national team next? What cup could they possibly play in next?
It's World Cup qualifying in September.
Oh, okay, the big cup, the one that matters.
I think we're playing Costa Rica.
Yes, Costa Rica is their first match.
There you have it. So catch them in the cup. Catch them in the qualifier for the next cup.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to talk some college football?
Yes,
please.
Okay, I thought so. I don't know how much you want to talk about the conference we're going to break down today, though, because it might be your least favorite conference, second least favorite conference behind the Big 12. It's the Pac-12.
The Pac-12 turns to ash in my mouth.
We're saving the best for last. We're going kind of from worst to better.
Mm-hmm. So we have, just like the Big 12, we have a list of superlatives that John mostly has come up with. We'll just jump right in.
Yeah,
let's do it.
So the first one, John's already choking on the ashes of the Pac-12. It's already happening. All right, so anyway, we'll do the first superlative, the Sleepless in Seattle superlative, because these games are the games that you probably find yourself falling asleep to on the couch after a day of watching nonstop college football. So if you have any reason to stay up for them, it might be this. What is the one team you would most likely stay up to watch, John?
The answer is no team, Jeff. The Pac-12 is, as I said, turns into ash in my mouth, to use a biblical expression. But I will, however, stay up to watch USC lose. I will stay up till 2 in the morning to watch USC lose football games. It's a great experience. Go Irish.
Okay. Unlike John, I will probably not stay up to watch USC win. But if I were, I would be to watch USC. I think that game between USC and Penn State last year, the Rose Bowl game, was probably the most exciting, bowl game in the whole entire, month of bowl games. I loved watching that game. I'm not going to stay up to watch them, but I think they're probably the most exciting team in the Pac-12 and most likely to make it into the College Football Playoff.
Hold on, you're teasing a later superlative. Slow down.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Happens. We get excited about Pac-12 football.
Mm-hmm.
So excited that I actually don't know what teams are and aren't in the Pac-12, because for this, I put Boise State, who, as John reminded me after I put it down, is in fact in the Mountain West, right?
Yeah, go Broncos.
Go Broncos. I think I really put this just because I'm a simple person and their field is cool. Blue turf. If there's anything that can keep you awake for those late night games, it's the blue turf with the orange splashed in there a little bit. I know it's not a Pac-12 team, but they're a West Coast team, and truthfully, it doesn't really matter. Player you'd most likely stay up to watch. Start with Cooper.
Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, yeah, because he plays in the Pac-12.
Well, no, he used to play in the Pac-12, and now he plays for the Panthers, which is an East Coast team, so I can watch him.
Fair enough.
All right. I mean, Pac-12, you really give any answer, and we wouldn't really know.
All right, fine. Listeners. Real answer. Stanford's tight ends. I love the way Stanford plays football. That kind of gets to, my heart of football. I love kind of powerful, like, I formation football teams. It's just how I think football should be played. Stanford plays that way. They typically have a pretty decent tight end. One of their tight ends.
Get a fullback in there with a neck roll.
Oh, it's awesome. So, yeah, so excited right now.
That's true. They are like the anti-Pac-12, and it doesn't usually work out that well. John, player, stay up to watch.
Yeah, so no one on Stanford, just so we can be clear. David Shaw's a terrible coach, and he coaches a terrible team. The team I would stay up to watch is Reed, I believe, Budrovich.
The team.
Wow, I'm not familiar with that team. I really don't know the Pac-12 that well.
At all. Reed Budrovich, I'm really kind of guessing at this point. I looked at USC's roster, and I clicked sort by position, and I picked the first name that came up under punters. I don't know if he'll be starting punting. Hopefully he will be. But I'd like to see him in action a lot this year because USC is going to be punting the ball a lot. Bad offense, bad defense. So looking forward to a big year from Reed.
Yeah, they have such a terrible offense with led by the player I'm going to list and arguably one of the Heisman front runners, Sam Darnold. We've talked about him on this podcast. I know Cooper's a big fan too, but he's got all the potential to have an awesome season. Just one of the most exciting players in college football and on a team that should be really, really good next year. So looking forward to watching him play. I'm going to call a quick audible. We had something different here, but as we were talking, this kind of came up. This is the Pac-12 is kind of the graveyard of coaches who were once other programs, other big name programs. You've got a number of guys who have been big names elsewhere. So coach you're most likely to forget and then re-realize coaches of Pac-12 school. Cooper.
Rich Rod. That's the easiest question in the world. Rich Rod, when he coached at Michigan, it was glorious. Those were the glory days of being an Ohio State fan because he was so bad at coaching at Michigan. I forgot he coached. I know he coached at West Virginia. Had no idea.
I forgot he coached at West Virginia.
Yeah, he did that. And now he's coaching at Arizona. And every single year they have like a pretty nice win against a team that they should not beat. And then after that, they're pretty awful.
Mm. All right, John, what say you?
Todd Graham. He's the Arizona State head coach. He's coached like at 50 bazillion different places. And he's never really won anywhere. He's kind of like the, what's his name?
Yep, that guy.
Fisher from the NFL.
Jeff Fisher.
He's like the Jeff Fisher. He's always at a cool 500. You know, maybe if he starts winning a couple of games, he'll tank just to even back out again.
Just addicted to mediocrity.
Yes, very much so. Todd Graham.
Kind of like us. Mine is Mike Leach as a Big 12 guy. I miss Mike Leach in the conference. He's really he's a funny character. He was obviously one of the first to introduce the air raid offense, the big pass heavy offense that shaped a lot of Big 12 football for the years to come. And then ran into some issues, obviously, that led to his departure at Texas Tech. But coaches at Washington State now, they perpetually have a pretty fun team, perpetually competitive, at least through a good part of the season before they actually have to play like Washington and USC. So Mike Leach at Wazoo, see if he can make some noise this year. Let's do the last one here. This is the San Andreas fault line. portion of the superlatives. Is it more likely that a Pac-12 team wins the college football playoff, or that the state of California and perhaps even the entire West Coast breaks off from the mainland and floats into the ocean?
100% California breaking off and floating into the sea. I mean, this is pretty likely to happen as it is, especially with, you know, everything going on in the world. Really, you know, if someone came up this morning and sort of shook me awake, wow, this is rough. So someone shook me up and said, hey, California broke off and floated into the Pacific Ocean. I'd be like, you know, might as well happen at this point. I'm going to go.
That would be the third headline down on CNN.com. That wouldn't even make like the top of the page. all right, Cooper, what about you?
Yeah, so I don't know if California's, you know, breaking away from the mainland United States, but I do think, you know, a Pac-12 team winning the college football playoff is pretty unlikely. It's possible that USC makes the playoff. They have a really good quarterback. But I still think if they're, you know, in a 14 playoff with teams like Florida State, Clemson, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, some of those teams, they're just going to be, I think, a step behind. I don't think they'd compete. And actually, I think in reality, the top four teams in the country will not include a Big 12 or Pac-12 team. So I think the chances of, you know, them winning the college football playoff are pretty slim.
Go Irish.
But to be clear, it's larger than the chances of California becoming an island.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to agree with you. I'm going to have to agree with you on this one. And I actually think USC, I don't know. It's been a while since there's been a really dominant USC team, and this is probably stupid reasoning, but it just feels like it's kind of like when the classic thing of Notre Dame, when Notre Dame's good, college football's fun. I feel like the same way about USC. Sorry, John, all due respect to your hate, but John's like eyes have never been, I've never seen him as mad.
It's disgusting.
But, so,
really.
So I don't know. I just have a feeling that USC is really poised to become, because when they're good, there's nothing quite like the buzz around that team, especially like being in the city they're in and the history the program has. So,
and then it's also justifiable. Instead of watching 12 hours of football, you can then watch like 15 hours of football.
Beautiful. On a Saturday. Yes. Amen. And so, so give me the Pac-12 team winning the college football playoff over California becoming an island. I'll take that. Anything else on the Pac-12?
I don't think I slid this comparison in yet, so I just want to make sure we go on record like this. I think I agree with you. Sam Darnold is going to have a great season. He's very Tommy Rees-esque. Tommy Rees sort of sophomore season here for him. So,
yeah, I so strongly disagree, but just think that statement was so dumb that I don't have to say anything.
Sixth best quarterback in Notre Dame history.
Well, that's sad.
That is sad. Very sad. All right, with that behind us, let's go to our California correspondent. We had an awesome interview with our good friend Cam, who is from California. We talked some baseball. We talked some Fire Four. Bear with us on the audio quality, maybe a little iffy, but here is our friend Cam. All right, we welcome on now our good friend, California correspondent. And this is actually not his first time on the podcast, because he was my roommate for a year. And if you listen to the podcast previous episodes during the NHL playoffs, you probably heard him, because he was pretty fired up about his Penguins, his now Stanley Cup champion Penguins. So it's Cam. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. Two-time Stanley Cup champion, two times in a row, actually. And it's a pleasure to be back on the podcast.
Apologies for not getting that right. Thank you for joining us, man. We actually brought you on to talk not about hockey, because as much as we know you'd like to, we want you to talk about your other team that also happens to be kicking butt right now. It's the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have by far the best record in baseball. They just acquired Yu Darvish today, blockbuster trade right before the deadline. And so as a fan, quickly want to kind of take your temperature. You're obviously excited about the team, but I guess we'll start with Darvish. What do you think of the move? What do you think of what they gave up for him? And where does this put the Dodgers in terms of going forward, especially the postseason?
No, I think it's absolutely a huge acquisition or huge trade for us. looking at Kershaw going down for about a month. I think it's really big to be able to fill that hole in our rotation that he's left, but also then to have Darvish going forward for September, closing out the season, closing out the hunt for the division, and then going into October where obviously you're starting, your rotation is everything. If you can get to that number eight guy, I mean, the Dodgers are so set up for success. Looking at, I believe now they have three of the strikeout leaders over the past five seasons in their starting rotation in Kershaw, Hill, and Darvish, which is absolutely just dominant. Not to mention that their offense this year has really come together. Several home run hitters, and honestly, it's probably the first time in my life that I really remember the Dodgers having serious home run threats in multiple players. I mean, it's the first time I remember that we sent a player to the home run derby in Bellinger, which is really cool to see. Obviously, I'm very excited about the team's success right now. I am a very pessimistic fan at the same time. As you know, having lived with me for a year, every single playoff series this past season the Penguins started, I insisted they would lose. Little as five games, I think, is as low as I went. So having seen 23 seasons of disappointment with the Dodgers, a lot of it in October, I'm not counting on anything yet. But I am hopeful. I'm a little more optimistic than usual.
Yeah. Couple things. We'll get to the postseason struggles here in a minute. You mentioned the offense, and Bellinger has been a big part of it. He came up really out of nowhere. He came up to fill an injury, right? When Jock Peterson went down early in the season, he stepped into the outfield spot and has turned into one of the most dominant offensive players. And what is the kind of feel about the lineup as a whole? Because you've got Bellinger, you've got Peterson. Are there any holes in the lineup that you concerned about, or like 1 through 9, do you feel like the team is set?
Well, that's one of the amazing things too, is that it's honestly the kind of team that you feel like is never out of it. Regardless of who's up, we can get it done. I mean, just look at Farmer the other night, last night against the Giants, coming up big in the 11th inning in his major league debut, able to hit the double down the line, go opposite field with a pitch, knock in two runs. I mean, it's just the kind of team. I think those are 31st, come from behind victory on the season, which is absolutely incredible. I think the Dodgers now hold the record for most wins in a row when leading at any point in a game, which I want to say it's like 58 maybe, which is absolutely absurd to think about how if they have a lead, they're almost guaranteed to win. And then even if they're down at any point, the fact that we have the ability to come back, it's a lot of it's due to just having such a strong, consistent lineup in every single so much depth. It's the deepest Dodger team I've ever seen. I mean, it's Seager, it's Puig's hitting now, it's Bellinger, it's Peterson. I mean, Grandal too is coming up big. I mean, everywhere you look, I feel really good about this team. Turner too. I mean, Turner voted onto the All-Star team. He's had an absolute heck of a first half of the season. I see no reason why it won't continue.
Yeah. So I don't know you probably know what pace they're on, 'cause you're a math guy, what the win pace is. Do you know off the top of your head?
So there, you can look at this two ways. I believe they went, could be wrong on this one, but I think they went 14-14 through their first 28 games. Obviously bad pace. But if you look at your pace since then, their winning percentage is up around 770-something. If you continue that pace over the remainder of the games, so kind of ignoring those first 28 games, that puts them on pace for 118 wins, which is the record.
And the major league record is
16
wins. So we'll see if they can get there. Be pretty cool. But what happens after that is really what matters. And I know our friend John here, as a Phillies fan, being a part of some of the heartbreak over recent, or I guess a little less recent, but your life of Dodger postseasons. So what's your mindset going to the postseason? Is it still the pessimistic cam, the Stanley Cup playoffs cam, or is this regular season, this phenomenal regular season, changed your mindset at all?
Well, first I want to touch on the Phillies ruining part of my childhood for sure. In 2008 and 2009, losing, and I believe both were five game series in the NLCS. I was at game five of the 2009 NLCS when the Phillies eliminated the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. And despite having just turned 16, you guys know me. Some might say I'm a bit of a fighter. And I do remember storming off away from my dad and actually actively looking for a Phillies fan to pick a fight with. It would not have gone well. I was lucky enough to not find someone, but that was a pretty soul crushing moment. So thank you, John. Glad you guys did not win in 09, at least. You did take it in 08, I believe. I'm still pessimistic. I also don't want to run my mouth before the Dodgers have proven anything in October. I haven't seen them win more than two games in a league championship series yet. So we'll see what happens.
John, any thoughts? Any encouragement for Cam?
It's a great feeling winning the World Series. It's also wonderful winning the National League Championship Series. That's a great experience. And you know, gosh, I just love beating the Dodgers. I really hate the Dodgers. I'm sorry. I gotta come clean. They're up there with the Yankees with my least favorite. Well, the Yankees and the Mets and the Nationals. I don't really hate the Braves that much, but gosh. Yeah, I'm excited to watch you guys lose in the postseason again this year. But you know, when you finally do get there, it's an amazing experience. And then your team invests way too much in pitching, and then the outfield falls apart, and then Ryan Howard blows his Achilles against the Cardinals, and then your whole childhood melts away, and the Phillies are terrible. So it's just how it goes sometimes.
I'll give the Phillies the championship in 08. I mean, after all, having to be associated with Philadelphia is not a good thing. At least when the Dodgers don't win the World Series, I still got beautiful, sunny California. I can represent and say that I'm from. So, you know, at the end of the day, Los Angeles over Philadelphia. So,
yeah, Los Angeles is the worst sports city in America. So.
Oh, there it is. The gloves come off. Speaking as someone who knows Cam pretty well from living with him, I'm going to step in now because I think his story about wanting to fight the Phillies fan, we don't need to recreate that here on the podcast. So, Cam, you've listened to this podcast a little bit.
Speaking of fighting, though, it is funny that I'm on the verge of fighting another Phillies fan, and John was the ref on one of my Bengal bouts fights.
Yes, good call, great call, good plug. Cam was a Bengal bouts contestant while we were all at Notre Dame. Career record of 1-1.
Hey, underwhelming. Man.
That was pretty good. Those were two pretty good fights.
I don't know. I still feel maybe there's a little bad luck charm having some Philadelphia fan there.
Yeah. So as a boxing professional, Cam, real quick, who's gonna win the match between Mayweather and McGregor?
I haven't been into gambling before because it hasn't worked out until a bachelor party a few weeks ago when I won a superfecta, and I want to put money on McGregor so badly just for the value. It does make me a little nervous that he got knocked out in sparring a week and a half ago or something. Not a good look for him. It's going to go to decision. It's going to be Mayweather, but I want McGregor so bad. I'm probably still going to put too much money on him.
Mm. Yeah. How can you not? Like, if anyone bets on Floyd, that's like,
there's no payout. Honestly, I know you guys don't give out, gambling suggestions necessarily. I'll do it. Go bet on McGregor. Do it.
I'm not going to say I don't endorse that decision. Let's leave it there. All right. Do we want to do the fire four with Cam?
Please. I'm done with baseball.
Well, maybe not, because this can go any direction. This is the fire four of, we started out as fire four of trades inspired by the Yu Darvish trade, but it has morphed into the fire four of acquisitions. And so sports, non-sports, doesn't matter. Fire four of all-time acquisitions. The way we'll do it, Cam, we'll let you give your four right away. We'll react to them. We'll discuss them. And then we can each go around and give ours as well. So you're the guest. Lead us off.
All right. I'll kick off with, obviously, I don't know if it's officially a Notre Dame podcast or not, but I'll do a Notre Dame one. For those of you who know Notre Dame football well, you'll know Notre Dame and Navy play every year, and Notre Dame will always have a spot for Navy in their schedule. It's a little trade made, I want to say, World War II, when Notre Dame gave up space to house and train officers for the Navy, and because of that, Navy gave Notre Dame the funds to continue being in operation, and because of that, the university is what it is today. It still exists, and we were all able to go there. I'm going to have to say that's one of the top trades.
Well put. I did not know that. John, did you know that?
I did. I was going to say a lot of value back for Notre Dame because it was like 89 straight wins or something bizarre like that until we lost. But yeah, no, that's one of the great stories of Notre Dame back in the 40s.
But also somehow like always ends up ruining Notre Dame's football season because it's just an awful game to play against a triple option.
it's either a loss or like three key players get hurt.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just that's overhyped. That's overdone. That's just the Brian Kelly era. It's not, historically speaking, that hasn't shown to be true at all.
It's not overhyped. It's like they've done like studies of like teams that play Navy and then they like the week after don't do as well. And that's just not Notre Dame. It's pretty much every college football team.
We've gotten 12-0. Just playing we've gotten 12-0 with the schedule with Navy in it before.
So yeah. Yeah, you're right.
We have gone on and just trump card really fast. Every time they play at your stadium, you get the Blue Angels. So
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a net win for Notre Dame. All right, Cam, continue.
All right. Number two, I'm gonna go the trade for Manhattan Island for some beads and trinkets.
Is that real?
Yep, yes, that is real. Oh, but spin zone though. Who traded for Manhattan Island?
I believe it was the Dutch and a tribe of Native Americans that did not own Manhattan Island. So that's a classic little. Hey, it's not ours. We'll take this, keep it, and then some other tribe actually owned it in the first place. Oops.
Yeah. The Dutch lose Manhattan Island later on.
Yeah, trinkets is so like unspecified. Those could be some pretty important trinkets.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics on it. The article I like really hardcore skimmed about 20 minutes ago did not go into my own time.
I'm glad.
I'm trying to be professional here.
All right, what's your number three?
Number three, I'm gonna go with snack pack for candy back at the at lunchtime or recess in elementary school.
It's a strong move.
Honestly, any trade you could make for food, that was basically the Wall Street of elementary school, maybe a little cleaner, but some big time trades, no doubt.
I don't know if it was cleaner, man. There's lots of under the table.
There was some backstabbing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. And your last one.
I'm going to go with the trade for Babe Ruth from the Red Sox to the Yankees.
Do you know what went back to the Red Sox in return?
Go ahead and tell me.
A very nominal sum of money that went towards a play.
When you say
funding a play.
A play.
Like a play you would go to pay money and watch with actors and actresses.
Huh. Was that Hamilton?
It was not Hamilton. It would have been at least defensible if it was Hamilton. But it was not.
One if that was Hamilton.
Yeah. But hey, it's okay. The curse has been broken. Yeah. Do we want to each quickly do ours, Cam? That was a good job. You brought it. That was creative.
Man.
All right, John, let's quickly hear yours.
Okay, Roy Halladay to the Phillies. It was one of the great acquisitions. We never won a World Series with him, but he did throw a no-hitter and a perfect game. Hit the Reds in the playoffs, which was, I think, one of the great playoff pitching performances of all time. Notre Dame signing a deal. This is really for ACC. The ACC, you know, kind of hoodwinking Notre Dame and convincing them to sign away five games out of their schedule each year for any bowl berth we want from the ACC and like a huge chunk of their college football playoff money. Josh Lyman to Governor Jeb Bartlett's campaign really, really swung the 1998 presidential election.
Well,
1998 Democratic primary, actually, for Governor Bartlett against Senator John Hoynes. And then Bartlett, of course, went on to win the general election and got a plurality of the vote, and then won a landslide and when he was reelected in 2002. West Wing, you should catch up on Netflix.
Wow.
And then
I genuinely like was paying 50% attention and thought that was all real until you got to the very end.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right, your last one.
My last one is October 16th, 2015. I traded a ring for a fiance. So that was a pretty solid acquisition. Cooper's throwing stuff.
Yeah, Cooper could not be more upset.
Such a shameless plug. I can't believe you just used our podcast that way. I feel like abused is honestly how I feel. I'm so mad at you.
I don't know. I give him credit. It was so shameless that I almost respect it.
Not dope. Not dope.
Not dope.
No.
Anyway, Cooper, let's hear your...
Number four, Beckham to the MLS. It briefly and momentarily made the MLS actually popular. I was at Beckham's first game in America. They played Chelsea. It was pretty incredible. Number three, a future acquisition would be when the MLS acquires FC Cincinnati as one of their expansion teams. Number two, the NFL and the souls of the American people. Somehow the NFL is the only league in America that can pretty much hold every single city hostage. Because if you don't build us, you know, if you don't build them a new stadium, they're just going to leave and find a new city. Don't know how that works. And number one is Ohio State. The Ohio State University has acquired the whole state of Michigan. pretty much it happened this century. I really started to feel kind of sad. I've been spending a lot of time rewatching Ohio State Michigan games, and I have a lot to go through, and Michigan fans just don't. So I don't know what they rewatch. And for a brief moment, I felt some sympathy. Yeah.
And in terms of Michigan videos out there, everyone should probably Google Brady Hoke Philosopher King and spend some time watching that video. It's amazing.
I miss Brady Hoke. He was an easy win for Ohio State. Jim Harbaugh puts up a little bit more of a fight. Still has a war.
You know you like it, though. You know you like it, the challenge. You like the chase.
Sure. I do like the chase.
Well, in the end,
all right.
I didn't hear that.
Hold on, Cam, say that again.
In the end, isn't it all about the chase? That's the exciting part. That's the fun part.
No, it's about winning. Yeah, that might be Notre Dame's motto, but I don't know how to say it's about winning.
We play for one championship, a national championship.
At the Ohio State.
Yeah, the Ohio State.
Yeah. All right. I'll finish really quickly. Number one, David Ortiz, the Boston Red Sox. For the Minnesota Twins when he was a lowly DH who everybody thought was slow and out of shape. That turned out pretty well. Number two is Blink-182 acquiring Travis Barker as a drummer. Because people forget, maybe people don't know, maybe most people don't know because I'm like the biggest Blink nerd on the planet, that Travis was not the original drummer. Travis Barker, the famous drummer for Blink-182, was not the OG drummer for Blink. Number three, In the spirit of Cam's, the Louisiana purchase was a huge acquisition, great value. And number four, changing it up here last minute, do a trade, the trade of the capital of the United States for a centralized banking system.
Are you still listening to Hamilton,
dude? Of course.
Yeah, that's true. I am too.
All right, anything else?
Yeah, so Louisiana purchase, $15 million. Joe Flacco's contract, $66 million. Just felt like that needed to be said.
Is the Louisiana purchase elite?
The Louisiana?
I don't know. It's late.
Yeah.
It's not Pac-12 late, though.
Is there any room here for like worst trades ever? Because I definitely had $90.25 for Enron stock.
No, I mean there wasn't, but we'll make room for that. That's a great one to end on. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here. It was a pleasure. Hope I get an invite again.
Absolutely, the pleasure was ours. See you next time, man. Thanks to Cam for hopping on and joining us. We're gonna do our last segment, the waste of data, and we're going to jump right to Cooper's because I know he's pretty fired up about him.
Yeah, so I'm not letting anyone go too early. Bob Costas a couple weeks ago, and I can't believe I haven't brought it up, brought up probably one of my favorite misguided stereotypes in all of sports. He said that the Bengals are running a halfway house for miscreants when talking about Pac-Man Jones and his most recent arrest. Yeah, the stereotype which kind of surrounds the Bengals really couldn't be more wrong. The Bengals were in the bottom quartile for all NFL teams in suspensions. They were actually, the Ravens were second in the league. The Browns and the Steelers ranked ahead of them. So they're last in their division in suspensions. America's favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, were first by a very large margin. The Bengals kind of have this stigma that surrounds them. And I strongly, strongly disagree with it. Probably the most recent example is the Steelers playoff game. And we all remember Vontaze Burfict's kind of nasty hit on Antonio Brown. People often forget that a Steelers coach pulled a Bengals cornerback's hair on the sideline when he ran off the field for a tackle that, you know, Shazier knocked out Giovanni Bernard in the game on a helmet-to-helmet hit that caused a fumble. Or that, what's his name?
Joey Porter.
Thank you. And that Joey Porter was on the field and, you know, egged on Pac-Man Jones into a 15-yard personal, you know, personal foul penalty, even though Pac-Man Jones is a linebacker coach and the Steelers offense was on the field. So I don't think the Bengals are running a halfway house of miscreants. Maybe the Joe Mixon pick wasn't the best look for them. But at the same time, I think if Joe Mixon was drafted, you know, by the Patriots or by the Steelers or by a franchise that the NFL loves, the narrative would be very different. So even though the Bengals really aren't doing anything wrong, and if I asked anyone probably to name a Bengals player that had been arrested in recent years other than Pac-Man Jones, you probably really couldn't come up with one. It's not a bad, violent, dirty organization, and yet it's seen that way.
My waste of data on a lighter note is people like The Ringer engaging in hyper-analysis with Game of Thrones. It's a good TV show. I don't know if it has the compelling storylines that people make it out to have, or if it's the amazing cinematography. I think it's high quality. I think it's definitely top 10 all time. But people are making it out to be like a once in a 200-year work of art, and it's not. I enjoy it a lot. It's highly consumable. I don't think it's that sort of landmark watershed event.
Just to be clear, I don't watch Game of Thrones. I've never watched a single, like, full season. But I just know that you don't want to poke Game of Thrones fans, because, like, there's nothing Game of Thrones fans love more than telling you how great it is and how much you should watch it.
Mm-hmm. If I didn't just use all my energy going off on Bob Costas, I would have said something. But I have none left.
I know. So just enter at your own risk, John. Enter the game at your own risk. All right, mine is John Heyman, who's a baseball writer, a baseball reporter, often breaks news on baseball stories, does a fine job, but he tweeted over the weekend that, quote, baseball celebrations have gotten out of hand and just plain dumb, which makes total sense for a sport that has like four-hour games, has trouble attracting young fans and marketing young stars. Yes. Fun sucks. Fun is the absolute worst thing, and players having fun is the last thing we want to show our kids. What will we tell the kids if they see players on the baseball field playing a game and having fun? That's all I got. And that's our show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in to All the Small Takes. Check us out on social media and at our new website, as we mentioned at the start of the show. Let us know what you think of that. Let us know what you think of the podcast. You can leave us a review on iTunes. Give us 5 stars, hopefully, if you like what you hear. And we'll be back next week. Same time, same place.
Nope.